All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this new Legislative Council public session. The meeting is called to order at 18:05 on the 20th of January, 2022. The Student Society of McGill University acknowledges that McGill University is situated on the traditional and unceded territory of the Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabe Nations. The Student Society of McGill University recognizes and respects these nations as the true and constant custodians of the lands and waters on which we meet today. Further, the Student Society of McGill University commits to and respects the traditional laws and customs of these territories. We'll now proceed with attendance. Before we call for attendance, I'd like to remind you all that a counselor can choose to share the preferred pronouns in the meeting, and these will be recorded in the minutes. If at any point the preferred pronouns change, please contact governance at smu.ca to make these changes. All right. Counselor Kusa.
I'm here.
Counselor Infeld.
Here.
Counselor Javed.
Present.
Counselor Guru.
Present.
Councillor Holton.
Present.
Councillor Josu.
Present.
Councillor Beaulieu-Shear.
Present.
Councillor Awan. Councillor Awan. Let's mark Councillor Awan as absent. Councillor Dagduki. Councillor Dagduki. Councillor Wenyu.
Here, but it's Hanwen.
Oh, my apologies.
Yeah, no problem.
Councillor Liao.
Present.
Councillor Pilsi.
He resigned and I'm the new a new rep for engineering.
Nice to meet you. If you could send us an email, that way we can officialize everything, that'd be great.
Yeah, I'm still trying to get the email address from him and the login. He's on a vacation right now.
So. Perfect. I was actually going to send you a message and ask who you were because you weren't on the list. Perfect.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting me know.
Okay.
Councillor Belia. Councillor Belia. Councillor Anderson.
Present.
Councillor Applegate. Councillor Applegate. Councillor Dekoshi.
Present.
Councillor Saad.
Present.
Councillor Zhang.
Present.
Councillor Wan. Councillor Wan.
Present.
Councillor Hodadadi.
Present.
Councillor Eiley.
Present.
Councillor Damore.
Present.
Councillor Zvegis. Councillor Zvegis. Councillor Khamis.
Present.
Councillor Kazi.
Present.
Councillor Perez Diniakos.
Present.
Councillor Claret.
Present.
President Ariani. VP Downey.
Present.
VP Haisele Kubia.
Present.
VP Paulin.
Present.
VP Delouvrier. VP Delouvrier. VP Seder.
Présent.
OK. Merci tout le monde. All right. We'll now move on to the adoption of the agenda. The agenda has been distributed. Are there any additions or correction to the agenda at this time? Vice President Poulin?
Could I add an announcement on behalf of the governance manager that I will be giving?
Sure, yes. Let's add for announcement. Is there a topic?
It's just like miscellaneous governance things that are coming up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Saad. I've received your message. If you could also send it to the parliamentarian, that'd be great. Are there any further modifications to the agenda?
Could we put the general discussion before new business?
Is there people who are here? If I'm not mistaken, there's people who are here just for the generative discussion?
Yes.
All right, so let's do that. That way they'll be free to leave. So if we can replace 12 and 11. Thank you. Cool. Perfect. Are there any more modifications? All right. Seeing none, can I get a motion to adopt the agenda as distributed? Councillor Kusa?
Yeah, motion to adopt the agenda.
Vice President Finance?
Second.
That is in order. Is anybody opposed to the adoption of the agenda? Seeing none, the agenda has been adopted. All right. First of the agenda, we'll be proceeding with the adoption of the minutes. Starting with the minutes of 2021, 11-11. So please just take a second and we can scroll through them. And if ever you've noticed something is off compared to the meeting, please raise your hands now. For the record, Vice President Durugi has arrived and he will be noted as present, as late pending. Actually, we can stop scrolling here. I don't think that scrolling through any news, anybody has any time to read anything. So in general, I will just remind you all to please check out the minutes in advance of the meeting. That way you can ensure that everything you are recorded as having said during that meeting is accurate. And if not, you can bring it up now. With this, we'll now be moving to approve the minutes. So the minutes have been distributed. Are there any changes or corrections to the minutes? Seeing none, if there are no further corrections, the minutes stand as approved, as distributed. Now with the minutes of the 25th, once again, are there any changes or corrections to the minutes? If there are no corrections, the minutes will stand approved as distributed. Okay. All right, they've been approved. We'll now move on to the report of the steering committee. So the steering committee met this Tuesday, the 18th. All were present for the exception of the governance manager and the president. We reviewed all the motions with particular attention to the motion regarding the amendments to the standing rules, as it is specifically within the jurisdiction of steering committee. The motion regarding amendments to the internal regulations of student groups was stricken as it was tabled indefinitely last ledge. thought it'd be important that, to let you know why it wasn't present. And for the reminders this week, we kindly ask counselors to keep the following points in mind. First off, you need to prepare the referendum questions for next meeting. A tutorial on how to prepare these GA motions will be distributed. Secondly, we ask that you review the changes to the deadlines adapted to the change in schedule, as we're now moving to once per month. And finally, beyond just respecting the rules, we'd like to remind you all to stay kind and charitable to your fellow counselors. It's been a while, you might be rusty, but we want to remind you that we're all students. We want this to be an environment that is not that is safe for everybody. With this, with the confidential session, you should be aware that we'll have a very brief confidential session this evening. That's all for my report. We'll now be proceeding with the guest presentation. Vice President Haisele Kubia is our guest present.
One second, I will check.
Thank you.
I don't see him in the participant list. I can send a message, but that might take me 2 minutes. So we can continue.
All right. Sure. By diocese discretion, we'll be skipping over the guest speaker and moving on to the announcements until the guest speaker arrives. We'll begin with the announcement concerning 5-year plan consultations. Vice President Poirier, you have the floor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So SAMHSA has finally met, and we've been doing a lot of work over the past month going over the master plan, also known as the 5-year plan. And really intense consultations have begun with staff, permanent staff specifically. But I would also love to get the input of counselors. So if you've had the chance to read the 5-year plan, if you've done like leisurely reading on the SMU website, it's one of the plans that, you know, has the most student input, and I would love for that to continue. As SAMHSA continues to meet, there are a few counselors here that are part of SAMHSA, taking on different aspects of the plan. So if you have anything to add that you want to see, like operations-wise, that, you know, SMU continues or starts to provide for students, anything for clubs and services, if that's something that you're really into. Advocacy is also a big one that we're working on this year to try and expand in the plan, because there's like half a page for it in the current master plan. So if you have any ideas of things that you would like to see, or you just want to know how SAMHSA is doing and how the master plan is being edited, you can send me an email. And I'll be more than happy to meet with you and to show you the kind of progress that the committee has been doing before we present it in April. The last legislative council. I have to double check before that is presented for final approval. That is all. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President. We'll now move on to the second announcement. The announcement of an AUS town hall on return to classes. Councillor Kusa, you have the floor.
Hi guys. I hope you're all doing well. So the AUS is hosting a town hall tomorrow at 4 p.m. to discuss the faculty's planned return to in-person classes on Monday. So many students have expressed concerns about the return in-person classes, and many others want to go back to in-person. So it's obviously not... we don't have consensus. So the town hall is going to serve as a space for students to express their concerns to us, their reps. And the Dean of Arts will also make an appearance. So I invite all of your faculties to also organize some type of assembly for students to voice their concerns. Because students in particular, those who do not have the privilege of being healthy, such as immunocompromised students, are feeling anxious and quite helpless, and aren't being helped by the admin. So and I would like to note that the Faculty of Law has met already, and the Faculty of Social Work has gone on strike. Please do contact me on Facebook or email if you need helping, if you need help organizing an assembly for your faculty. Thanks.
Thank you, Counselor. Finally, we'll have the announcement on behalf of the governance manager, Vice President Poulin. You have the floor.
Okay, thank you. So our governance manager wanted me to just remind you of a couple key dates and events that are going on this semester that are very important. So our referendum period has already begun. So if you or a group that you know is submitting a referendum question this year, you would have to send that to elections at SMU or DEO at SMU.ca. So those, and Eric too. So you'd submit that to those three people before February 21st. If you have any questions about motion writing, you can contact our policy and advocacy coordinator. That's a new position this year, and she's going to help a lot in the kind of motion writing questions that you might have. So you can reach her at pac@smu.ca. If you guys can't remember all these emails, you can just message me and I'll forward this email to all of council if that's easier. The executive elections begin on February 1st. So that's exciting. So if you're interested in nominating yourself, if that's something that you wish, the kits are available at elections.smu.ca. And the deadline to nominate yourself is February 21st. So everything kind of congregates around February 21st. That's kind of the day to remember because the SMU General Assembly is also on February 21st. So we invite you guys all to bring your constituents to encourage them to come. There's going to be a couple motions that I'm aware of that are passing at the GA this year. So please be sure to attend so we can quorum. And yeah, that is all I have to say. So if anyone has questions about that, I can forward this email to all of council. So you guys have all of those important emails for motion writing and submitting questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President. And I'll most definitely be reminding you all next council to please come to the GA and encourage your constituents to come to the GA. It's essential for smooth democracy. All right, we'll now be moving back up to Vice President Finance. Do you have a question?
Yes, I have an announcement.
Oh, of course.
Thank you. So, hey everyone. I would just like to take this opportunity right now to apologize to both Councillor Kusa and Councillor Javid for the remarks I made on the November 25th Legislation Council last semester. So during the council meeting, many of us were there, following the presentation question period on a motion presented by the councillors, I made unprofessional comments that rather than focusing on why I opposed the motion, targeted the councillors as individuals. As such, I did not only violate the standing rules and general decorum required when engaging in debate, but also contributed to creating an unsafe space for individuals wishing to present motions, and especially for councillors Kusa and Javid. Doing so was wrong with me, and regardless of it not being my intention to do so, I caused distress in a situation that would have been better resolved with kindness. I would also like to recognize my positionality on the matter. As a white man, it's important to recognize that my comments were directed towards two women of color, and as such, I should have been more cognizant of the impact of my words with that dynamic at play. Furthermore, as an executive, I participate in the Legislative Council from a position of power. As such, my comments and their ability to create an unsafe environment were magnified. As such, I apologize for my behavior and I will make sure it doesn't happen again. And yeah, it's important to be respectful, and I failed to do that.
Thank you very much, Vice President. All right. At this point, we'll be going back to number 7, the presentation by our guest speaker. Welcome.
Hello. Okay. Can everybody see me and hear me?
Yes. Do you have a presentation that you want to share?
Nope. Just my face is fine.
Perfect. So we can turn down the presentation. That way you can have the full screen.
Wonderful. Thank you. So my name is Eric Van Eyken. I am McGill alumni 05 and 09, and I was SMU VP Finance and Operations back in 2005. Which doesn't seem that long ago, but probably was. So great to see exciting things happening at council and debate happening, and thankfully debate happening in a respectful manner, or at least efforts at that. Reason I'm here today is to talk about the McGill Scarlet Key Society. So for the last 100 years or so, actually 100 years exactly this year, the McGill Scarlet Key Society recognizes extraordinary leadership by students at McGill. both at the undergraduate and graduate level. The application period is now open, and I've had a chance to speak to both Carla and Eric Sater about McGill Scarlet Key, and hopefully having you all as leaders on SMU Council and in your communities know about this and help to nominate people for the award. What is their award? So there's an annual pinning ceremony in which nominations are made and their award is given out by the principal, generally at the faculty club in a nice evening with alumni of the society there as well. It's often recognizes 12 to 15 or so absolutely outstanding students who have gone above and beyond in being leaders in their community. And so it's a wonderful group. So you get recognition in being in that amongst that group of students and peers for the last century. Also working with Carla and Eric this year to do something new, which is introduce a $1,000 bursary, which will be giving, which will be for the first time being given to award recipients, subject to the executive being able to move forward with that. So that's quite exciting. So that's generally it. You're welcome to Google McGill Scarlet Key. And you can see there's a webpage on their alumni, McGill alumni page and the McGill alumni, McGill website. And we'll also be, of course, be benefiting from Carla, who's gonna be doing some promotion on the SMU listserv. I'll pause there for any questions. I see Carla's question. Great. Yeah.
Hi, Eric, how are you? So my question wasn't this, a lot of students ask me this. Does my GPA matter? Can I nominate myself?
Still? Good question. A good two questions. So the answer is absolutely, sorry, I won't say absolutely not, but mostly no. Your GPA does not matter so long as you're a student in good standing. And that goes with, so you're not failing out of McGill. And that's because the society recognizes leadership, understands that being a student leader may have an impact on your grades. But of course, being a leader also involves taking care of yourself and making sure that you're not failing out of McGill. So as long as you're within the I'm not failing out category, we recognize your leadership, and that's what we're trying to do. Next question, can you nominate yourself? Yes. So each nomination can be by yourself or you can nominate someone else. We generally require two reference letters, which are again, ideally by peers. So hopefully all of you on SMU Council who know excellent leaders can identify those and perhaps be a reference for those people and encouraging them to believe in themselves. I think very importantly, especially if we look back at their award recipients in, you know, the 1930s and 60s, there may not have been the gender and ethnic diversities we'd want to highlight today. So please, of course, also encourage those from any community to apply for their award and recognize themselves and believe in themselves, because you guys can recognize talent and you people can recognize talent. Thank you. Anything else?
Any questions, please raise your hands now.
And there was I saw in the brief moment, somebody from athletics. We often have leadership from athletics because of course, a lot of team sports require those outstanding contributions in being that motivating person on the team and getting things happening. From clubs, from other things, it's truly an honor. But in before COVID times, we generally have a reunion doing homecoming. And it's absolutely fantastic to be able to meet people from past decades who are outstanding student leaders at McGill then and hear about the struggles they had, whether it's struggles involving French at McGill, gender equality at McGill, reforming governance, contributing to the community. And it's absolutely outstanding to be able to see a century's worth of leaders get together and share stories. I see a question from Councillor Holton.
Sorry, I just wanted a reminder on when the nominations are due for this?
Yes. I don't recall the exact date, but likely early February or mid-February. And their awards are going to be given out subject to the principal's schedule either last week of March, early April. So we'll do that. Also, nice ASUS Arts and Science Undergraduate Society.
Yeah, it's the new
name. Glad to see it still exists. I invented that in 2004.
Really?
Yes.
Was it basic when you were, we were basic for a while? And
yes. Okay. Yes. And I had to exercise at the risk of making a bad joke. I had to exercise restraint in not calling it BASTARD, which stood for the Bachelor of Arts and Science Temporary Association of Representative Department. Anyways, basic was a better word. And my humor has evolved, hopefully. So yes, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, is the applications are due. Anything else? Good, thank you so much. Is there a way that I can post the application link in the chat? If so, I will do that.
Yeah, definitely post in the chat, and then I can send it to council by email as well. So it stays in their emails for perpetuity.
That would be wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you for your efforts in recognizing your peers. That's appreciated. And I look forward to seeing your applications. Have a good day.
Thank you for being there.
And good luck with your efforts at SMU.
Thanks, Eric.
All right. Thank you very much for the presentation. We'll now move on to the next point in the agenda. All right. So with this, we move on to point number 9, the question period. For a bit rusty, I'll just remind you all. Question period, we receive questions in advance, but you're also going to have the opportunity to discuss questions on time. We have decided, the steering committee and the dais, to begin writing the questions that we receive in advance for accessibility measures. And it's going to be on the document. It's going to be clearer in advance to everybody which questions are going to be asked. Personally, we think that's going to be a good initiative. All right, so we'll begin with the first question. What advocacy is SMU doing for the safe return to campus? Vice President UA.
I actually did not see this question ahead of time, so please forgive me if I'm rambling a little bit. But I encourage everyone to stay posted and keep a watch on SMU social media. On Monday, we announced that we're going to be providing respirator style masks on a pay what you can basis to students who are especially vulnerable to COVID. And we're hopefully going to be announcing details about this in the coming days. So please stay tuned for that. I'd also encourage you to stay engaged at McGill Senate. The Student Senate Caucus was there yesterday asking some very good questions to McGill's administration. Further, I remain available. Please email me if you or anyone you know has concerns about accessibility measures in classes. I've already reached out to several profs and encouraged them to provide more sort of built-in accommodations rather than waiting for incidental accommodations to happen. I stand for any follow-up questions there. And again, we're always open to suggestions as to how we can best advocate for students right now.
Thank you, Vice President. If anybody else wishes to answer this question, please raise your hands. If not, we'll move on to the next question. Are there going to be rapid tests on campus like in previous semesters or other facilities that the school is planning to offer to students such as KN95 masks? Vice President Yue.
So at the moment, McGill has said that they are not providing asymptomatic rapid testing. They're saying that that's in line with the provincial directive that rapid tests only be used on symptomatic individuals. So right now they've allocated their rapid tests to symptomatic people who work or live in residences. I am hoping that McGill will bring back the pilot project, which was asymptomatic rapid testing, as soon as the provincial directive suggests they can, and that they expand this eligibility, because while it's good that students and residents are getting them, everybody's being brought back to campus and it remains very difficult to get tests. If you're in a position where you don't have access to rapid tests, I'd encourage you to keep checking the Clicks on Tay website, because a number of people I know have been able to access tests through there.
Thank you. Before we continue on with the questions, I should mention the link I sent in the chat is the link Eric mentioned. I will also be sending it through your emails. All right. By Eric, I don't mean VP Finance, just to be clear.
It was actually also VP Finance 15 years ago.
I don't mean current VP Finance. All right. Move on to the third question. Are students being consulted for making the best decision for a safe campus return? If yes, how and how many? VPUA.
So as with a lot of issues that SMU takes an opinion on and decides to advocate for, it's often up to the executive committee and, when applicable, legislative council and board of directors to identify an issue and decide how to move forward in advocacy. In this case, myself and I can't speak for the other members of the executive committee, but please feel free to jump in. I felt that advocating for students and other community members who are immunocompromised, disabled, or otherwise vulnerable to COVID needed to be a priority, because there are many students whose needs are not being currently acknowledged and dealt with in a proper way by the university. I believe this is in line with many other positions that SMU takes in terms of advocating for other marginalized groups. I'd also direct anyone who has concerns about representation to please feel free to reach out to us and to just continue to participate in student government.
I'm muted. Thank you. Anybody else wishing to speak? Seeing none, we'll move on to the next question. Executives initially said that the president's absence was a political issue that staff weren't involved with, but they are now characterizing it as an HR issue. What prompted this change in characterization? VP Finance.
Yeah, so the president's absence, as I have said multiple times in front of this body during question period, is a human resource issue, because any member of staff is categorized as members of the human resources of the society. As such, anything that happens with a member of our staff, by definition, is a human resource issue. I do not recall us ever describing the president's absence as a political issue. And staff obviously are involved insofar as their jobs are affected by the president's absence. But we've been managing quite well, I believe. And yeah, that's where we are. This is fundamentally, as I've said multiple times, an HR issue. And this is not a legislative council issue.
Thank you. Particularly with this question, I'd like to remind the council that the question period are questions to the legislative council, as for the past semester, for the past, my past term, every single question that has been sent to the legislative council has been targeted to the executives. In case anybody wishes to ask a question to the society, the questions during question period are broad in scope. They are to the legislative council. They can be to executives, specific executives, or all executives, but just so you know, which is also why I invite you to answer questions that after every question is answered, which I will do now. Anybody wishing to answer this question, please raise your hand. Seeing none, we'll move on to the next question. Why doesn't the society have an up-to-date copy of the employee manual on its website pursuant to Article 13.2 of the HR policy? Anybody wishing to answer, please raise your hands now. All right. Seeing no answer, we'll move on to the next question. What is the total budget of legal fees and how much of it has been spent? Vice President Finance.
Yeah, so the total budget of legal fees should be available on the website as well. But if I look at my documents real quick, the budget for the 2022 financial year, which ends in on May 31st this year, is $188,903.05. So to be clear, this does not only encompass legal fees. The way we do our budgeting for accounting is that we encompass all professional fees under the same umbrella. So only a portion of this budget is dedicated to legal fees. So I cannot speak exactly on how much we spend specifically on legal versus other professional fees, which historically have involved things like rush translations. But at this time, I don't have access to my accounting software because I can't go into the office. But if I would guess off the top of my head, we were probably on par for spending less than what was budgeted. So probably around 90,000, maybe we spent up to now, maybe 100,000. I'm not quite certain. But yeah, for context, last year, we spent $250,000 on professional fees. So just in general, we do have significant professional fee expenses. That is the reality of being a society and being involved with legal and staff implications throughout the year and situations where individuals may or groups may choose to pursue the society on legal matters.
Thank you. With this, the questions that we've received in advance are exhausted. We'll now continue on with the minutes that are left to this section of the agenda with questions from Elsie. So all those wishing to ask a question, please raise your hands now. Councilor Saad.
Hi, yeah. So I guess this is for anyone who wants to answer. But on December 31st, the president of SMU posted on his Facebook that he actually graduated from McGill University. So my question is, why then has he either not been removed from office or why have there not been any developments in the situation? And should the president not be a student and member of SMU?
Thank you. All those wishing to answer the question, please raise your hands. VP Finance.
Yeah, actually, Sarah, I believe, also was going to answer the question. I'll defer to Sarah first if there's anything specific.
That works. VP Internal.
Thank you. Eric, I'm sure we were going to say the same thing. So you just have to be elected as a student. You're allowed to graduate and still can finish off your term. So as long as you are elected and you are taking a full course load, considered a full-time student, whether that be four or five classes, you can finish out your term even though you have graduated. So I don't know if you have any follow-up questions to that, but that's pretty much the situation.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to answer the question, please raise your hands now. Councillor Perez Niñacos.
Sorry, I wanted to ask another question.
No worries. With this, anybody else wishing to ask a question, please raise your hands now. Councillor Perez Niñacos.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess my question is for the heads of the society. I would like to ask if you actually care for what students have to say, because you initially said that you consulted.
Councillor, I'll have to call you out of order with this question. Please change the language you use for the question. We'll move on to the next question, and then we'll be able to take your question again. Anybody else wishing to ask a question, please raise your hands now. Councillor Zhang.
My question is directed at the exec. I would like to know if the executives do believe in good faith that SMU should be held accountable to the student body above all other parties, including the board of director, and whether or not they believe that is currently the case.
Thank you. All those wishing to answer the question, please raise your hands now. VP Finance.
Yeah, my position on it is, of course, the student body is the ultimate, you know, body, is the membership of the society. And as any other corporation, we are beholden to represent the interests of the shareholders. And that is the membership of the society at its core. However, within that is the requirement of the board of directors to act in their fiduciary duty towards the company and towards the membership of the society. And that requires the board of directors to sometimes make decisions that may be opposed by a certain portion of the student body or may not be understood by a certain portion of the student body, because we have unique access to certain information given our roles as directors. So I see it as the same, in any corporation, fundamentally, our responsibility is to the membership, and they are the ultimate body, I guess, that governs the society. But the board of directors' job and its role is to manage that in the interest of the student body. And we are beholden by laws to act in that way. And as such, I do believe that the board of directors throughout its tenure, and at least throughout the tenure that I've been on it, has acted within its fiduciary duty towards the membership.
Thank you. All those wishing to ask a question, please raise your hands now. Councillor Perez-Iñacos.
Sorry about that, Mr. Speaker. My question is, well, previously in this meeting, the VP University Affairs said that for consultations, they are made within the executive committee or often go to a legislative council or a board of directors, governors, the one about smoke. Anyways, so what the issue that we have voiced our concerns for is the absence of the president. We've talked about it in every single meeting, yet the executive...
question, please.
Yes, sorry. Yes, the executive team has failed to actually answer to us or blocks it at the board of directors. So do you actually listen to what we have to say?
Thank you, Council. Anybody wishing to answer this question, please raise your hand now. VP Finance.
Of course, we listen to what members of the committee say. Of course, we listen to the membership and to the Legislative Council. But fundamentally, as I mentioned before, the board of directors has a fiduciary duty to act in ways that benefit the corporation. And that's what, at its core, we've been motivated by, to make sure that the membership is being served properly based on the information that we have available. And as I've said multiple times, and I will continue to repeat as long as it is required, the Legislative Council is not involved in human resources matters. It is not the responsibility of legislative counselors to be pursuing these issues. As individuals and as members, you can absolutely ask questions, but we are within not only our right, but our responsibility not to answer these questions because they involve situations or involve the you know, status of a staff member. We can't simply be revealing that information publicly. We've been quite clear on that. And that's not us ignoring the membership, that's us doing our jobs. I'm certain in certain situations, for example, that could erupt and that would necessitate us to keep silence on HR matters. There would be situations where if we did reveal, you know, confidential information, that could open us up to lawsuits. It brings us back to the discussion, you know, of why SMU at its core spends, you know, $250,000 a year on professional fees, right? So, and trying to avoid those situations. I'm not saying it applies in this situation, but in general with HR issues, we need to maintain confidentiality at all costs. And these contexts, I think, need to be recognized by the Legislative Council. And I've mentioned this repeatedly, and I will continue to mention it as long as required. At the end of the day, I recognize that councillors are doing their jobs in holding us accountable and asking us questions and making sure that the situation is acceptable and is being dealt with acceptably. And we are doing our jobs by not answering those questions because we can't, because we have our fiduciary duties to society. And to me, that's the end goal here. And I think once again, I do not begrudge anyone who asks questions on this topic, but I will reiterate, we cannot answer anything involving staff in this context. We've been quite clear about that. And we've made sure that is the accurate case on our end, and it is the accurate case on our end that we cannot be answering this. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me be noted for the record that Councillor Doug Dookie has arrived at 6:47. With this, any further questions? Please raise your hands now. Councillor Saad.
Thank you. So in the open letter that SMU published, or the statement rather, I'm not sure what the terminology is, but SMU cited an absence of leadership in the administration's decision for the reopening of in-person classes. Now, I'm all for holding the admin accountable, but how can SMU use such language concerning leadership when we literally don't have a president and have not had one since practically the start of term?
All those wishing to answer this question, please raise your hand now. VP UA.
Okay, I don't believe that this was Councillor Saad's intention, but I have been filling in for the president on all of the sort of admin COVID communications since his leave of absence began. And when we say that we were not consulted in meaningful ways, what we mean is that in these meetings where we're supposed to discuss with admin and advocate for the student perspective, it became more of a dynamic where they say, this is what we're doing, and we get to ask questions, but we don't have the opportunity to disagree or advocate for the student opinion and be listened to, that sort of thing. So regardless of whether it would be me or the president in that role, we were not consulted in meaningful ways. So I don't believe that the president's absence has anything to do with this matter, but I thank you for your question.
Thank you. With this, we've elapsed the time by quite a bit, but we asked some important questions, and I was under the belief that it was important to ask them. So with this, we'll now be entertaining our 10th point in the agenda, the recess and consent items. Now, as a reminder, I'll remind everybody what a consent item is, as we have a high turnover rate this year, and maybe some people don't know. A consent item is within your voting directions. You will find a form called consent items. It will be a simple vote on every single motion that is presented today, in which if the motion is unanimously approved through the consent item, we won't have a discussion or debate. It won't even be presented. It'll just be approved. If there's one vote to debate the motion, then the motion will be debated. Any questions? Does everybody have access to their voting directions? VBUA?
My computer is having a hissy fit right now, and if I try to open another tab while I have Zoom running, it will cause issues for me. Would you be able to send the link in the chat?
Sure. One second. Thank you. No worries. Please do remember to answer the polls with your council emails. Sometimes you'll mix them up, use another SMU email or the personal emails. It makes it easier for me to, after that, assemble who voted for what and make sure during council that the votes are legit. All right, so this is the consent items. I see a vote has come in, so I'm pretty sure it works. With this, we have a 5-minute recess while everybody fills out the consent items. So see you all at 57. We'll now be resuming. It is 19:07. With this, we'll now be revealing the votes for the consent items. All right. Okay. Starting with the motion regarding progress updates on SMU divestment and demilitarization campaign mandate, with 21 consents and 5 debate, this motion will be debated. The motion regarding the creation of an anti-racism master plan within SMU, 22 consents and 4 debates, it will be debated. The motion regarding the vice president sustainability and operations, with 22 consents and 4 debate, will be debated. The motion regarding amendments to the steering committee terms of reference with 26 consents will not be debated and has unanimously been approved. And the motion regarding amendments to the standing rules to the 2021-2022 Legislative Council with 21 consents and 5 debates will be debated. Okay. Now I have to say that there's 26 responses, but there's 38 people within the call. So just please do vote. I make a list of all the people who did not vote, and it's public, and you know it's just a bit. If your people who vote for you see that you don't vote as a representative of them, you know it's not a good look. So vote, please. You're like failing in your responsibilities as a counselor. So you know, let's not do that. With this, we can move on to the next point in the agenda, starting with the discussion. So we'll now proceed to the generative discussion on the moratorium on ancillary fees. Now, do note that because we've determined that this discussion can easily fall into a circle of debate. We'll be considering the time limit of 20 minutes quite thoroughly. And we'll start with a 1 minute speaking time to anybody who wishes to speak. With this, Councillor Josu, you have the floor.
Thank you, Speaker. So I just wanted to talk about the moratorium. The moratorium has been greatly detrimental for the athletic and recreation community, which is mostly constituted by students. And as such, we have seen that, especially during the pandemic, physical health is part of mental health. And I just wanted to know, as the council, how are we as the Legislative Council going to change the situation and help those who have been greatly impacted by the moratorium?
Thank you, Councillor. All those wishing to speak, please raise your hands now. VP Finance.
Yeah, I'd like to, I guess, briefly bring up a couple of things and maybe clarify the situations for anyone who's not super knowledgeable on the moratoriums. I actually made a mistake in our meeting earlier this week, Councillor Josu. There are actually two moratoriums. So there's the first moratorium, I believe, was passed in 2017 and is no longer in effect as of February 22nd this year. That was a moratorium that would require McGill to give us an updated budget and numbers and information before we would accept any new or increases in ancillary fees, which includes the athletics fee. So that is running out soon. So if anyone's interested in renewing that policy, they can. However, there was also another policy passed in 2020 that will last until 2024 that covers moratorium of fees until McGill divests from specific investments that are listed in the motion, which is generally, I believe, focused mostly on oil and gas. I don't know if demilitarization or other types of divestment were mentioned in that motion, but that's kind of the context for Legislative Council. At this point, we cannot increase those fees.
Yeah. All those wishing to speak, please raise your hands now. VPUA.
I think everyone got the gist from what Vice President Sater said, but basically this other moratorium is in place until 2024 or until such a time that McGill divests from the specified investments, which are, I believe, oil, gas, other fossil fuels. So yeah, that's, I believe, some discussions have centered just around the first moratorium regarding the budgets from the university, but the second one is still in effect as well and will be until 2024.
Thank you, Vice President. All those wishing to speak, please raise your hands now. VP Finance.
Yeah, so I guess my position on this is a little difficult. So on one hand, I think it makes a lot of sense to be using these sorts of measures to pressure McGill. Ancillary fees are a great way for McGill to make money. I think, as we know, like there was a lot of discussion like the athletics fee when we were all online, why is this being collected? Like it is a way for McGill to make money. And I think that's important to recognize. This is a very useful tool for us to pressure the administration. But I also think it's important to recognize, and something Councillor Josu brought up, that the punishment that is being doled out on this to a certain extent goes to the administration and its ability to raise money from the student body, but also affects members of the athletics department and people who are seeking to compete. And so I think it's, I personally am not quite sure where I stand on it, but I think it's important to note that, or would be interesting to note, alternatives or methods that we could do to help the individuals in athletics while also keeping our ability to use this as a tool to pressure the administration.
Thank you very much, Vice President. All those wishing to speak, Councillor Josu.
Yes, thank you, VP Finance. But I also want to highlight the fact that it is not only varsity students who use the facilities, but we offer a great offer of different activities. You can go use the fitness center, you can go do some tennis, you can do squash, you can reserve a basketball court to do a pickup game. So it is not just as the varsity that are penalized by the moratorium, but also other students who just want to use the facilities for having a great time to take some stress off. And the fact that the moratorium is currently forbidding us from doing crucial renovations is really, really, really a factor of concern for athletics varsity, but also as well as athletics recreation.
Thank you, Councillor. All those wishing to speak, please raise your hands now. Just Councillor Joshua, I know you've invited people over. Members of the gallery are allowed to speak during general discussion, so feel free to raise your hands. Councillor Parsons.
Hello, councillors and speaker and VPs. I wanted to address something that VP Sater said pertaining to the question as to why is there an athletics fee when we are online? Similar to what Councillor Josu was saying, ANR has continued to offer services even when the building is closed. For example, like there's trivia nights every Tuesday, e-gaming, like e-sports. So for students who are wanting to get involved, it's another outlet. They also offer equipment rental to members of the community as well as students. There's a lot of services that are outside of varsity athletics. And kind of what's happening right now with the moratorium is it's preventing ANR from collecting fees that specifically pertain to improving the facilities. And then what happens is those funds that would go to the facilities are taken away from services for the students. So what we're seeing now is long-term planning of services that would benefit the students being taken away because those monies have to be allocated towards improving or maintaining the building with things such as ventilation.
Thank you. All those wishing to speak, please raise your hand now. Councillor Infeld.
I just have a question, I guess for Councillor Josu. I'm wondering what do you foresee the long-term effects being on the general student body if the fees continue to be withheld like this?
All those wishing to speak, please raise your hand now. Councillor Josu.
Thank you. So as for now, as I said, there are current renovation that needs to be done. The first one is ventilation. And as of right now, Chloe said, the money that would be used for those kind of renovation is for service is now being used to renovation. And my biggest fear is that the facilities were just starting to, maybe it's a big word, but crumble under the fact that we cannot be we are not able to receive any money. So I think Chloe has more information.
Thank you, Councillor. Chloe Parsons, you have the floor.
Yes, to respond to Councillor Infeld's question, so some of the imminent repairs that are needed are on the air conditioning in the field house and gym. So that actually imminently affects all students. If you think pretty much any undergraduate student is showing up in those facilities to write their exams, I'm sure I'm not alone when I say I've worn a coat to write an exam. So that's the type of repair that they're looking at right now. Ventilation, retiling the pool. So something like retiling the pool, if they can't retile it, there'll be a leak and then that service will be suspended until they can amass the monies to do that. That could also mean rendering services more expensive for students. So things like accessing the gym, accessing the sports medicine clinic, accessing rentals, intramural sports, all of those services that are offered to students at a very fair rate now will be grossly inflated in price if they wanted to continue offering other services. Otherwise, it would mean a diminishment in services, perhaps reduced building hours, less cleanly buildings, fewer study spaces, et cetera. I hope that answers the question.
Thank you. All those wishing to speak, please raise your hand now. There's still 11 speakers to this discussion. Chloe Parsons.
I'm not sure if I can speak to what's been a blockage in the past. I understand that currently the two moratoriums are what are impeding us or, you know, the SMU from putting forth a motion to vote on bringing back the facility improvement fee for McGill Athletics and Recreation. I think it's important to point out that McGill Athletics and Recreation are not funded by the university. They get an allocation from the university that the government gives to the university for services such as the ones we offer. And we're not in a position to take a stand regarding divestment. It's not possible. It's a PR nightmare, and it's outside of the scope of McGill Athletics and Recreation. So I just want to point out that what's happening right now is students are losing out on services because basically Athletics and Recreation has their hands tied. They can't do one thing or the other until something gives somewhere.
Thank you. All those wishing to speak, please raise your hand now. VP Finance.
Yeah, I just have a question in general to anyone who could answer it. Does McGill make revenue from these fees? So functionally, like the money that is being collected from the student body for the athletics fee, is that going to McGill? Because my question here is the idea behind the moratorium, as I understand it, I obviously was not here when it was written, was to put pressure on the administration by taking away a route of revenue for it, essentially force it to, at least as much as we can, force the administration to do anything, to consider and hopefully implement steps towards divestment. That comes with the assumption that we're actually pressuring the administration by preventing its revenues. Is that an accurate assumption? And if not, who's getting this money?
Thank you. All those wishing to speak, please raise your hand now. Chloe Parsons.
I'll be very happy to answer VP Sater's question. If I can, I'll look for it during the time of this meeting, but McGill Athletics and Recreation presents a balanced budget. Funds coming in are spent. Any funds that are accrued over the years are specifically things like the Facility Improvement Fund, which must be accrued so that the improvements can be made. The monies made by McGill Athletics and Recreation stay within McGill Athletics and Recreation. It's a self-funded unit, and all those monies that go in are put out towards services for students. So, I mean, it's not registered as a not-for-profit, right? But that's the idea, is that monies coming in are then put back into improving facilities, improving services for students, et cetera. No monies are going back to the university itself. It's really a completely separate entity, financially speaking.
Thank you very much. Councillor Holton.
Yeah, I have a question about Chloe, Ms. Parsons, what was said about the athletics department not being able to take a stand on divestment and not being in a position to do that. I was just wondering if you could elaborate on why that's sort of outside your range of, I guess, is that more of a question of it's not your responsibility, or is it that there's actual risks in taking such a stand?
Thank you. All those wishing to speak. Chloe Parsons.
Admittedly, Senator Holton, the answer to that question is somewhat above my pay grade. But the last time this question was brought to council, which was in 2019, I understand it was done a la Wild West, which, you know, at least Senator Josue is bringing up a discussion, which is wonderful. But that we brought that information back to Athletics and Recreation, and they basically told us we can't take a position on divestment. I think it has to do with the fact that ultimately, you know, I can't say for sure. I suspect it has somewhat to do with public relations, also to do with because Athletics and Recreation holds no bearing over the university's financial decisions, them making a statement does not benefit them. And it could do more harm than good in terms of any potential relationship with the university. So right now they're not collecting money from the university, and they won't be, but it could be, for example, that the university says that money that the government allots for them, they're holding on to it, or I can't say for sure.
Thank you, member of the gallery. We still have 5 speakers to this discussion. All those wishing to speak, please raise your hands now. Councillor Perez-Niñacos.
Yes, so I was actually present in those meetings. In my case, that was when I was representative of McDonald campus. I was just checking back of the website, And sorry if this was already answered, but yes, the purpose of the motion was to put pressure on the university. And if I remember correctly, at that point, the VP Finance stated that this money is somewhat always offered by McGill to put into athletics. But once they hear that this move is not going to move forward with the moratorium, then they remove it as a kind of a consequence. I'm not entirely sure. I'm trying to find the minutes of that meeting. But yes, McGill does have the money to, well, at least at that point, did have the money, but they keep removing it because this move will not pay its share because of the moratorium.
Thank you very much. All those wishing to speak, please use your hands now. Councillor Joseph.
Yes, I also want to add that I think everyone agrees that climate change is actually an important matter, but I also think it is possible to put pressure on the McGill administration without making the students having go that experience of feeling that the facilities might not be able to sustain on the service it was going it wants to maintain. And I also want to make sure that as long as I am there, I'm sure I can work with ACC and anyone trying to make sure that if everything goes well and we'll be able to continue making some money, I want to make sure that the money we use is also used in a green way, making sure that we work with green companies and make sure that we don't
necessarily... Thank you, Councillor. All those wishing to speak, please use your hands now. Just to make sure, you can all see the timer, right? Okay. Just because we've had problems in the past where people couldn't see the timer. I'm just making sure. If not, I seem very rude interrupting you. all right. Member of the gallery, Parsons.
So first of all, I'd like to add to what Councillor Joseph was saying. So currently, I know ANR is making moves to be more sustainable. So without making taking a stand on divestment, there is the possibility to nonetheless do what I'm going to say is divestment adjacent decisions. For example, they've just purchased Zambonis. They needed new Zambonis and they went electric. So they're looking to make more changes like that. And I don't know if it's worth adding, but there's a new director of athletics and recreation, and he's looking to shake things up and make a change. He cares deeply about what the students have to say. So as Senator Josu mentioned, this is a really important issue and pertains to student well-being, and the director is ready to listen. And we've had more student meetings this year than I've seen ever, thanks to this director. So I think it's important to point that out, that we're ready to listen and change can be made. If I can really quickly answer Senator Perez's question, I don't know exactly, but I think in the 80s when it was put forth, oh, sorry.
Thank you. All those wishing to speak, we still have time for three speakers. You can finish your point if you want. You can take the minute. Go for it.
So Senator Perez, from what I understand, I'm not fully clear on exactly how the fee works. That again, a bit above my pay grade. I don't get paid at all, but you know. When they conceived of the fund in the 80s, the university agreed that if the students make a contribution, they will match that contribution. And they have continued to do that. However, without monies coming from the students, the university not only doesn't match it, but they take whatever monies that they would have allocated to facility improvements at athletics and recreation, and they use it elsewhere. So those monies aren't sitting around waiting to be spent. In fact, the university has gained funds to do something else with by not giving it to athletics and recreation. I hope that clarifies the question a bit, or the answer.
Thank you very much, member of the gallery. All those wishing to speak, please raise your hands now. I saw VP Finance thinking before raising your hand. You have the floor.
Yeah, I'm trying to think more. My question is, so you're presenting this as you mentioned that university historically always matched what students contribute. Students are still contributing money, and now the university has refused to match that amount of money that is currently being contributed. Where is the source of this original decision to match the contributions? And was this part of an agreement with McGill that they're now, I guess, in violation of?
Chloe, you have the floor.
So VP Sater, I just want to clarify, there are two funds. There's the funds that students continue to pay that you asked the question about before. So that fund, I don't know what it's called, but I think it's just the athletics fund. That, I'm not sure what the deal is with that fund. The fund that we are talking about is the facility improvement fee, which goes into the facility improvement fund. So the university does not match our athletics fund fee. The university does not match that. It was specifically the facility improvement fee that they were matching monies. So what happens now is those monies that would have been collected for facility improvement aren't being collected, and the university has to Athletics and Recreation has to reallocate different funds on facility improvement. Like something like ventilation can only go so long before, as Senator Josu alluded, things start to crumble. So I hope that helps clarify it. It's really two separate funds, the athletics fee, and then the improvement fee. So the improvement fee is the one that they agreed to match in 1980.
Thank you. With this, the generative discussion has elapsed. I hope to see a motion concerning this topic presented soon, as it seems to be a very discussion-prone topic. Thank you all for participating in the discussion. With this, we'll move on to the next point on the agenda. Point 12, new business, starting with the motion regarding progress updates. Motion regarding progress updates on smooth investment and demilitarization campaign. Councillor Java, do you have a point?
No. Oh.
Could I make a point of order?
Yes.
I wanted to propose amendments to the second motion before it's brought to the floor. Just to the title, changing it so it adequately represents what the motion is about.
Great. Just for future reference, that's not a point of order. You scared me for a second.
Yeah.
Point of order is if I made a mistake.
I'm so sorry. I'll go back to the council presentation part.
No worries. So you want to motion to edit the motion?
Just the title.
Okay, what's going to be the modification?
To change it to motion regarding the creation of an anti-surveillance master plan within the SMU.
And this is the amendment, by the way.
Wait, sorry, Councillor Kusa?
I'm the one who motioned that motion. It's friendly. We can change it. It's all.
We still, even if it's friendly, we still have to have a simple majority vote. What was the modification, because on my screen it's what you just said.
I just sent it to the parliamentarian, but
perfect. Okay,
yeah,
can you email it to me, please? I don't know how, my chat disappears on Zoom for some reason.
So I think that the difference is just instead of anti-racism it's anti-surveillance.
Yeah,
perfect. So we can put that in yellow, anti-surveillance. Councillor Kusa, are you seconding this amendment?
Yeah.
Perfect. So we'll do a quick vote by hands. We need a simple majority for this motion to be substantiated. So all those in favor of changing the title of the motion from anti-racism master plan to anti-surveillance master plan, please raise your hands now. Thank you. That's 22 votes for. put your hands up. Please put your hands up. Yeah, thank you. Okay. All those against this modification, please raise your hands now. All right. Seeing none, the motion has been amended. All right. Thank you. Okay. So we can now move forward with the motion 11A, the motion regarding progress updates on smooth divestment and demilitarization campaign. So Councillor Kusa and VP Downey, you have the floor.
Okay, cool. So hi again, guys. So this motion would ensure that SMU executives are actively advocating for divestment and demilitarization in accordance to the mandates outlined in the climate justice policy, the policy on harmful military technology, and the DHR policy at the levels of student body, as well as the university level, and including the McGill Senate and the Board of Governors. So it mandates the VP External and UA to present reports on their outreach, education, and advocacy conducted so far in accordance with all the mandates outlined in the policies mentioned in Appendix A. So it's basically like the DHR policy. And these reports are expected, if this motion passes, to be presented during the presentation section of the March 24th, 2021 LC. And it also mandates the VP Finance to present a report of the society's own divestment, own investments and other financial relationships with companies linked with fossil fuel extraction, including but not limited to RBC and companies involved in any of the activities described in the climate justice policy, harmful military technology policy, and the DHR policy. And so the nature of the report would explain and describe how our relationship with different corporations we are, and explain how SMU is working toward divestments in its own portfolio. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll now continue on with a 5-minute question period. All those wishing to ask a question, please raise your hand now. Councillor Josu.
Thank you. So I guess is the divestment, is the government steps also going to be taken account if we think about the moratorium? If you understand my question.
Yes, so it doesn't involve what the generative discussion was about. But I'd be happy to discuss that with you and maybe come up with ideas to address your problems. But it mentions basically McGill, like how SMU is pressuring McGill to divest, which is what the policy asks you to do, like mandates us to do.
Thank you, Councillor. Just in the future, please wait for me to call on you to answer the question. All those wishing to ask a question, please raise your hand now. Seeing none, we'll move on to debate period. All those wishing to speak, please raise your hand now. VP Finance.
Yeah, I think this is an excellent motion. I think it brings up a lot of good points. I was consulted on this motion, and I mentioned then, I'll mention it again, a lot of this will not be a particularly interesting presentation on my end, because we cannot legally invest in these categories per the IRs, which hurts our revenues, but I think for a good cause. But a presentation on RBC could be done. That's not an issue. We do have an ongoing banking relationship with them. And I think it's important to be honest to the student body about exactly who we're dealing with.
Thank you. All those wishing to speak, please use your hand now. VPUA.
I want to thank Councillor Kusa for all her hard work on this and echo the sentiments of Vice President Sater as well. I think a lot of students want to demand accountability from their elected representatives, which they should, but they don't necessarily know what sort of things they should be looking for. So I think spelling it out in a motion like this, such to say something like, this is our mandate, this is how we're working on it, I think this is a very positive way to ensure accountability, and I encourage everyone to vote for this motion.
Thank you. All those wishing to speak, please raise your hand now. Seeing none, we will exhaust the debate period. And we will move on to voting. Right, one moment. Try to locate my vote links. Perfect. So we'll move on to voting on this motion. You can find the voting form for this motion on your councillor voting directions, marked number one, and I'll be sending the link in the chat as I usually do. Please just shout out if you have any problems.
It's saying on my end it's no longer accepting any submissions.
Same here.
Same thing.
Okay, should be working now. My apologies. Works? Seems to be working. Okay.